And I just listening to your new CD Fuego, which I just love this Fuego release. It's actually Native American flute with a little bit of a Latin flavor to it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, my mother was from Mexico and my dad was Native American, so I put the two together and came up with this new sound. That was kind of fun.
It is fun, and it makes total sense because you know if you're down near the border and you're playing around the Midwest, there's a lot of that influence on top of that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and of course, then you were at Oscar and Kenya's place, and they certainly they have the Latin influence as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they recorded everything. But my music partner Nelson Rios, he played with Gloria Estefan for like over 20 years, and along with Santana, he's been with the Los Lonely Boys and a lot of groups. So he had a lot of Caribbean. He's Puerto Rican Taíno. And so his Caribbean beat and my influence, we merged together and came up with the sound. That was kind of cool.
Well, perfect timing. I got your CD this morning. Now, you have quite a background in the Native American community, and you've had quite a few releases out. And I think right now you are a two-time Native American Music Award, and they call that the NAMMYs. And you have, three of your songs are up for NAMMYs this year as well, aren't they, Fuego?
Fuego has, we have three nominations. At the NAMMYs this year,
Explain to people about the Native American music community a little bit. We talk about travel a lot, and of course, I go to Sedona, you know, where I have a radio station quite a bit. But there's really a whole amazing culture, and I kind of have to equate it to what we have here with the Native Hawaiian culture. But there's been a renaissance of wonderful music and culture being recognized by the world, hasn't there?
Yes, there has, and it's been a long time coming. It's been happening for quite a while, but it's kind of like a slow motion train, and because even in the Grammys we've had Native American categories, and now they're gone because there wasn't as many Native American musicians back then, but now there is, so we're hoping the Grammys will bring us back in again. But I still submit to the Grammys. I'm a voting member of the LA chapter here. And I got my, this Fuego's in the Latin Grammys and as well as the American Grammys. But this has been a really slow motion kind of movement we've had. The NAMMYs are kind of equivalent to a Grammy for the Native American people. The music, you know, the music was kind of like brought back as far as the flute's concerned. Probably 20 or 30 years ago, I would say. And it's been kind of like a slow genre, and it's been like a close-knit. I call it a small but a very large group of people. It really is. It's interesting because the Native flute, and I'm talking flute music, it's a small-knit group, but it's worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. There's so many people that are involved with the flute. However, the Native American Music Awards brings in not only just flute music. We have rappers, we have the blues, rock, pop, you name it. There's all kinds of genres now. We don't just have flute. Flute is just one genre now. So, you know, and I've been in the NAMMYs, Native American Music Awards, for quite a while, and I've won 4 Indian Summer Music Awards, I think we've won 3 New Mexico Music Awards, and in every one that I've been in, we are just one genre, the flute. But and I've been in different categories. I've actually been in best rock categories, and so it's been fun. You know, you come up with an album, you have your own style. You know, you don't necessarily have to be in traditional flute music. So the Native music has really come a long, long way. Like, I have some good friends up in Canada, and Bill LeBlanc. He calls himself Relic. And he's a rapper, and he's from Canada, First Nation. So it really encompasses so many types of music out there. And a lot of people don't know that. That's the thing that people need to know, is that, you know, we're very versatile people now. We don't just, you know, we're not just the native person with the garb on in the corner playing a flute, you know, to traditional crickets. You know, it just doesn't, that's no longer the thing now. It's more of, it's very well versatile.
There's got to be some, and I have to relate what you're saying. Of course, it's very similar to what we see here with Native Hawaiians. But I have to say, there's probably also more of an audience for Native American concerts and festivals. Is that growing as well?
The Native American concerts, yes. We still have the flute circuit. I probably do maybe two a year. Most of my my concerts are pretty much mainstream concerts. But I do a couple of years. There's one I'm coming up in November in Florida. It's called the Native Rhythms Festival. And it kind of takes in the flute, most of it is. But at the same time, like, we bring our band in there and we kind of give it a different flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have, you know, different guest stars that come in and play. But there's not a whole lot of... There used to be more flute festivals than there is now.
Yeah.
It's kind of dwindled a lot because I think it's just money and different maybe logistics of, you know, where locations. I think we've had problems with that in the past. And I think that's kind of taken a toll on some of these people.
Yeah.
And so they've been dropping a lot. Like in California, we don't have any flute festivals here in California at all.
Really? Oh my gosh, I am shocked at that. I really am. Mm-hmm. You know, if they made those bingo places have some Native American to give
exactly.
back. You know, like in Canada, they make you give back to the music if they were just to.
You would think so. Huh?
Yeah.
You know?
A little give back would be nice because they have huge venues. You know, it'd be kind of nice.
Yes,
to have
I agree. I mean, they have. I mean, matter of fact, me and my wife were driving down the freeway going towards Palm Springs, and there's a big sign that, you know, it has Indian casino, and it has Oktoberfest with a blonde woman, you know, with a kind of big
and beer,
bosom. I
and
guess
beer
you
drinking.
And, you know, my wife goes, you know, I don't get it. This is a Native American casino, and we're talking about Oktoberfest. When do you guys ever get, like, you know, Native American month, which is November, I never see anything happening coming out of the casinos.
Wouldn't that be nice? But I noticed you just said you were going to do playing in Florida. And again, we don't think, are there Native American Floridians and I guess we have to ask the next question, and how they survived Irma, you know, and how that's going to be.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends out there, and they made it through it okay. It was pretty rough, but it wasn't as rough as they expected, and they got through it. But, you know, in Florida, you know, you have the Seminoles. They're pretty, the Native people are pretty big out in Florida. And matter of fact, the Nannies are at the Seneca.
Really?
Which is in Niagara Falls. That's where the Seneca casino is. And it's all, you know, that whole area there is, there's a huge tribe, the Seneca tribe. And, you know, and people, it's really interesting. Because people think, when they think of Native Americans, they think of Cheyenne, the Sioux, you know, the Apache, and, you know, and there's so many tribes out there that are, you know, you never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Like my tribe, you know, we're Kuwiya.
I've never heard of it.
California, we're a very small tribe.
Huh. Well, can you pronounce that again one more time?
Kuwiya?
Kuwiya.
Kuwiya, yeah, Kuwiya. And it's interesting because we're a small tribe, but if you tell people Kuwiya, they won't even know what that means. And where's that from? Oh, Southern California. Oh, you know, I'm Cherokee or I'm Cheyenne or, you know, those are names that are large tribes in the mid plains. And of course, Hollywood has a lot to do with it too, because as Hollywood plays whenever they portray an Indian, it's not they're not a small tribe out in this corner of California. You know, it's the main tribe out in the middle of America. So,
yeah.
But, you know, we all have our backgrounds. Not all of us play or are known for our flute playing. You know, our tribe is known for our bird singers and basket weaving. However, I picked up the flute, you know, probably about 5 years ago.
Well, tell me about bird. I've never heard of it. I mean, it makes sense, but tell me about bird singing.
The bird singers are they're a group that they go around and they pretty much chant. They play the little drums and they sing. And they sing our praises. And they call them the bird singers. And they're pretty well known. I've been places even far away as Midwest that I've actually seen the bird singers there, you know, which is pretty cool.
Huh. Interesting.
But, then basket weaving is another thing, too. We're very well known for our basket weaving.
Which are worth actually quite a bit of money. If you get
my grandmother, my great-grandmother, I mean, they're all Kuya.
Wow.
And they go way back into as far as we can even know how far back.
Really?
We go.
Wow. And of course, I've been down when I was born in Hollywood Hills area in Los Angeles, and I'd go down to Palm Springs, and there's quite a few. You go down to Palm Springs, there's quite a few Native American areas down there as well.
Yeah, that's the Agua Caliente, which the Agua Caliente tribe is Kuya. They are the band of Kuya.
Yeah.
And that's where some of my family's from. Matter of fact, I'm playing at the Dinner in the Canyons in the Kuya Canyons October 7th with my band. This is like their 25th year, I think, they're doing the Dinner in the Canyons.
How nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. I've been wanting to be involved in that for years, and I finally got picked to be the group that's going to play the Dinner in the Canyons.
That sounds wonderful. Is that in the hills up above Palm Springs there? Or?
Yes, it sure is.
Oh, nice.
Way up in the canyons. I've only been there a couple times. The one time I was there, we did a PBS show, and I played up in the canyons for a PBS show that we did about 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And that's the last time I've been there. But what they do is they actually build a stage for us. They put all the chairs in there, and they have it's a huge dinner that they bring people in, and everything is done in the canyon, and then after it's all finished, everything gets tore down and put, and it looks exactly the way it was when
nice.
They got there.
Well, you know, there was this whole thing, when I'm a child of the '60s and in Hollywood, and there was this whole thing about people appreciating and understanding the spirit of the Native American spirit resonated with the whole hippie. I wasn't ever a hippie, but the whole movement of the 60s and everything. And then, so there was a lot of recognition of it. But then there was also, I kind of wondering, because so many people now are checking their roots and doing their DNA and doing their studies, right? And they're finding that they, and Kathy Takushi's here, and she's in the studio, she's nodding her head, but they're finding they have some Native American blood in them. So they kind of get this new interest. Are you seeing that people are finding that they have some roots, Native American roots, and all of a sudden want to find out more about the Native American culture?
Oh, definitely, yes. There's more and more all the time. I mean, a lot of people don't realize, some of the people that were involved in their families centuries ago. And there's been a huge, since the DNA testing, I think Ancestry.com, they were the ones that started all this. And they they have helped a lot of people to get to know who they are. And a lot of people are finding out that there's a lot of Native blood out there that they didn't even know. And there might be a trace. It could be a little bit of a trace, whatever. I've always known who I was. My father was full-blood Native, and we knew who we were. And it wasn't popular because I'm also, like you, I'm a kid of the '60s, and we were told as kids, you just go in there, you're an American. You don't say you're a Native. You don't say you're
really.
First, we didn't say Native back then. We said Indian. You're not Indian or you're not Mexican.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. So we were pretty much, we had to shelter ourselves a little bit like that, and that's just the way it was back in the '60s. We went to an all white school, and I blended in fine because my dad was very super dark, but my mom was very white, and she was born in Mexico. And being that, their family, blonde hair, blue eyes, white people from Mexico, it's really odd, but that's the way it was. So my pigment was enough where I can get away with it. Some people thought I was Italian, maybe.
Wow. But didn't you feel part of you was being kind of just crushed?
Yeah, I was just kind of got through it, I just couldn't really talk too much about it.
Wow. I would have thought it would have been the opposite, because I really thought that in the '60s it was hip to be Native American. I thought that was a very cool thing.
Not in 65 and 66 and 67. That wasn't really good. That was fine when it hit like 69.
Yeah, you're right.
In 69, 70, my dad finally, he was really got into our heritage, and he really, really kind of instilled in me, and I was only 11, 12 years old at the time. He made sure that this is who you are, and be proud of it. And that changed me for my future. And my name Rush Inouye was given to me when I was very small, and which means one who talks too much.
I love it.
And it fits. Trust me, it fits. So even to this day, I'll tell you, it's a really bad name to have growing up with four brothers and a sister, because you don't get called Rush Inouye, you get called other names besides Rush Inouye. But I tried to change it to Running Wolf when I was probably in my 30s. I like the name, but, you know, Running Wolf sounds more powerful, doesn't it?
I thought it was your name, Steve. Yes. Rushing Wind was your last name, but Rushing Wind was your first name. In the family, each child had their own native name,
exactly.
And Rushing Wind was
exactly.
What?
Exactly.
I got you. But I think Rushing Wind is beautiful.
Well, I like it now, but when I was a kid, I didn't like it. But, you know, going on with, you know, life and where I'm at now, I'm kind of glad that I kept it. And
so do you find that, do people come and visit? I mean, do you have a tribal area left in California that you ever do tribal gatherings at that you can actually go and visit and meet some of
Yes. Especially the Agua Caliente, which is the one off of Palm Springs, they're not my personal tribe where my family came from, because my family was born in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And they left in 1890 out of that area.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to go back home would be impossible, because my grandmother was born in 1880,
mm-hmm.
and my great-grandmother was born in 1850. So it's too hard to find out where exactly what tribe they were, what part band they were from. But the Agua Caliente, they're really good people, and they have taken me, and I have worked with them. I've done music videos for them, musically speaking, and you know I've been affiliated with them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's where I can go to. That's my family where I go to.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really big on powwows or anything like that.
Yeah.
They're just not, you know, they just, mm-hmm. they have their own agendas, and they do a lot of teaching and things like that. And it's a different type of tribe. I mean, it really is.
And each tribe is very different for each area. And does each area each tribe reflect the area that it's from? Is there that same feeling that different areas have different cultural expressions that they?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because, you know, you got to remember we're mostly desert, you know, in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
Of course, even my family from San Diego, they were by the water, you know, so there was a lot more abalone, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the desert, you know, it's all geographically separated. Like the Plains Indians, you know, they have a totally different background, folklore.
Mm-hmm.
Our stories that we have of the Kuyas are so different than the ones that you find in the Navajo or Hopi. They have their own stories. We have our own stories, and we have our own language too.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Kuya has got its own language, and the thing is that the language has really gone. It's really sparse now because the fact that generations have lost a lot of that language. But you got to remember where our location is. We're Southern California. We're Palm Springs, San Diego, which is close to Mexico. And you got to remember, there was no line drawn in the sand once upon a time. So a lot of the Kuya people speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have agua caliente, which means hot water.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. And this fuego release you have has that wonderful blend in it as well. And I imagine in some of the areas of Arizona, down by the border, that might be true as well.
Yeah.
I know I go to Sedona. In fact, I'm going to add, I've just added this morning, Fuego to my station in Sedona.
Oh,
KUOs.
Nice.
I love it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Well, you know, in Sedona, in Arizona, you know, I mean, I go there and you see a lot of the Native American influence. In the red rocks in the mountains, you can see where the tribes and the Indians actually had dwellings in the mountains, mm-hmm. up on the top there and everything. And
absolutely.
And definitely.
As well as New Mexico, too. I mean, you got the Pueblo Indians, you know, the Spanish influence with the New Mexico Indians are really strong. A lot of Mexican or Spanish, I should say Mexican, Spanish names. It wasn't Mexican, it was Spanish, which is, you know, the same language. But so the influence is strong there. That's why you get the Pueblo Indians and things,
mm-hmm.
like that. And if you go if you're in New Mexico, you'll see a lot of the names of the tribes. You know, you have San Felipe. You have different types of tribes that are Spanish, and that's just the way it is. You know, for us out in the Southwest, you get into the Mid Plains, people even look different. You notice?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the native people from like the Sioux and the Cheyenne. You know, they have a little bit more of an Asian kind of a feel to them, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a totally different, different breed altogether, you know.
That when I go to Sedona now, I sometimes stay at the Enchantment, and they have actually, they try to do cultural programs, and they do have a Native American learning experience that people can be a part of and storytelling. And
yeah.
I think they, you know, they try to give it some recognition. As I said, I think people might really. Do you find that traveling wise, people can they go to a reservation? Can they actually do it? Can people find certain reservations and find a way to take a trip to a reservation?
Yes, you can. I mean, especially like the Kuya people, they'll give you a day pass to go through the canyons and enjoy the reservation out there. But there are some that are very strict. I mean, it just depends on where you're going.
Uh-huh.
And you got to remember, sometimes traveling on Highway 40, you run right through them. I mean, you don't even know you're in them, but you're there. Especially in New Mexico, because you got the Navajo Nation's humongous nation. And there'd be times where you can get pulled over by the Navajo police.
Huh.
And you wouldn't even know it. But you might, if you're driving along the roads out in New Mexico, there's a good chance you could get stopped if you do something wrong, of course. But if you're just speeding, whatever, you can get pulled over by the Navajo police.
Interesting.
You'd be surprised. I mean, a lot of reservations are very nice. Some are, not so nice. I mean, they'll want to know why you're there and no, you cannot, go in.
I know quite a bit when I go up there. I go up Oak Creek in Sedona, and you'll see in some of the areas on the top that Native Americans will come out and they'll have their tables where you can sell. But, then you kind of wonder which is the real, Native American jewelry, and if someone wants to buy a Navajo rug, is it really a Navajo rug? There's so much now that you kind of wonder what is really made by the Native Americans.
Well, that's a good point. And, it changed. I think it was 1972. The Native card came out. In order to sell Indian wares, you have to have a card with a number on it,
and that's given
to you by the government.
Huh.
And when you buy, let's say you purchase a rug or a painting or something like that, you have to have a card that says you're Native with a number on it. That's given by the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Huh.
And without that card, if they're selling Indian wares and they don't have that card, then they can be arrested for that.
Because I was not aware of that.
That's what happened. So too many people were being imposters, and they were selling the Indians, and Indians were having a lot of issues with that. So the government came in and said, okay, from now on, we're going to give you a card. And that's how it works now.
Interesting point.
But that goes for paintings, and that goes for like
jewelry,
things like that. Uh-huh. But not music or authors. Authors don't have to have, or musicians don't have to have that card.
Uh-huh.
But I know that anybody that does art, painting, jewelry, whatever, has to have that card to sell at the.
So would you say that there's an upswing and more economic opportunity for Native Americans than there was before? Do you see that things are improving?
It's a slight improvement. I wouldn't say it's a huge improvement. We're getting more, have notoriety and a lot of different things. But I hate to say that sometimes, as much as we try and strive to continue and go forward and be recognized, I think there's just such a mixed bag when it comes to that. There's I think it has to do with maybe some of the natives aren't ready for it. Some of them are. There's a lot of holdback on some people that don't want to accept certain things, and they find certain things offensive, and they can be offensive. I'm not saying they're not.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that why we're not moving as far as we are, I really don't know. I mean, it's a possibility. It could be that. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's something else. But I feel that the respect for the Native American person is not there yet.
Mm.
you know, like when they do movies, they cast these Hollywood stars that are not even native. They still give it to the person that's non-native.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really a shame. There's just so far we can go, and then it ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give you an example with Grammys, for instance. You know, we're trying really hard to get that. Hopefully we'll get the native category back, but that was gone.
Same thing happened with the Hawaiian music. You know that. That was same thing.
Same thing. Hawaiian is, they're in the same category than I am.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. As is the Cajun.
Same thing.
Right. It's just like that's a lot of people in one category, right?
It is. And it's really sad because when I submit to the Grammys now, you got Cajun, you got Sadeco, I think they call it. I don't even know that. Pronouncing it right, but you have so many different types of roots. They're called roots. Now we're categorized in the roots category. So.
But I'm glad to see you're submitting in Latin. That's a whole nother ball game, and that's going to be interesting.
We submitted the Latin Grammys, and we'll see how that goes. We'll find out on the 20th of September, and if we get a nomination, it would be really thrilling if we did. And then through Oscar and Kenya, you know, they're Latin Grammy winners already.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying, you know, we're working on it, and just happy to be part of the process.
Well, and I have to notice, I was told by Kenya that you're going to Japan in October, and Kathy Takushi, who's here with me, was just saying we're kind of interested. This year, Kathy's booked so many trips to Japan, although she's not been there, but where are you going to be going to Japan?
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Well, yeah, I'm going to be leaving on the 26th, and I'm going out there for a native exchange. I'll be out doing, I'll be touring, I have two nights in Tokyo, Nagoya, Izu-Wazu.
Izu-Wazu? I don't know.
Yeah,
don't know that one.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm probably slaughtered it, but I'm working on my Japanese. But yeah, I have an interpreter that's waiting for me there. We're going to be performing. This is through High Spirit Flutes. High Spirit Flutes is the world's largest flute maker company. It's Odell Borg out of Arizona, Patagonia.
Wow.
And he's sending me out there, and the representative out there, the promoter, he's picking me up, and we're going to tour 10 days, I believe it is.
Wow.
And then, so we'll be in Japan for 10 days. Then when I come back home, that I have one day off, and then I fly out to Florida to do the Native Rhythms right afterwards.
Wow.
Some jet lag coming up.
Have you been to Japan before?
No, this will be my first time.
I was there years and years and years ago, but we were just saying before you called in how here in Hawaii it's become huge to have Japanese tours for Hawaiian music, and the hula has become huge in Japan. And so now our Hawaiian musicians, if they want to make money, they go to Japan. They'll sell out stadiums there. Honest to God, they cannot make the money here, but they go to Japan. And that's where they make their money, and the hula halaus will come even here for hula competitions. And there's one or two teachers that have actually hula halaus. Hula halaus are groups, you know, in northern Japan. So they have this hunger for, they really love Hawaiian culture.
That's pretty amazing.
Well,
I did not know that.
Maybe you can start up this love of culture for the Native Americans.
Boy. I would love to. You know, it's been slow out there, but I know that they really have a love for the native flute, you know, being that they have their own flute as well.
That's true. They do. What's that one called?
The Sakutachi?
It's very mystical sounding flute.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, not
and, you know, and also Germany has been really coming up with the native tradition too. They actually in Germany they actually have powwows, believe
not. Me. Really?
Yes, and they mimic exactly the way they do it here. I am not lying to you. It's really amazing. I've seen their powwows. Of course, you know, they get a lot of criticism from the native people here.
Yeah.
I mean, some native people are okay with it, but not all. They feel like they're stealing their culture. But,
that's where you come in and say, we'll be glad to send a Native American ambassador to be there to oversee
it,
you know. That's where you have the educational factor come in, and it gives these people jobs to be able to, and a lot of them really welcome having a real Native American there to oversee it, you know, and teach, you know. And I bet you they would love to have a powwow in Japan if they haven't already set it up. I bet that would be really, because just based on what I see, how they love their Hawaiian culture, I bet that it'd be, I don't know, maybe they already do powwows in Japan, but I bet it would be huge.
I don't think so. But I really didn't know the Hawaiians were doing that over there. And that's kind of really interesting. I'm going to look into that when I'm there.
Oh, I mean, they go to stadiums, literally. They go to stadiums and sell out 45,000 people. We don't even have 45,000 stadiums here, you know?
Sorry.
That's your dog. He plays flute, right?
My dog's here. I have friends that are, you know, that they go to Germany every year, like I said, and they do pretty well out there. But in Japan, they haven't, you know, as far as I know, they have not done anything with the powwow that I have heard. Just the flute, the natives, they call it the Indian flute, they call mm-hmm. it. And that's, you know, there's a big group out there that really love the Indian flute.
Well, I think it's great that Spirit, is it called Spirit Music? Spirit, what's it called, the group that's putting this on?
This is High Spirit.
High Spirit.
High Spirit Flutes.
Great name.
They're the ones that are promoting me and putting it on, and that's what's behind all of it. And this is their fifth year, I think, they've done
it. What kind of flute, what kind of Indian, there's quite a few, I know, what kind of Indian flutes do you play?
Well, I mean, they're basically have the same scale. I mean, unless you're getting into the Mediterranean scale or something like that, but they're basically pentatonic scale.
Mm-hmm.
They're just different keys. So you're going to have some big, deep flute with a really bassy sound, and you're mm-hmm. going to have the high flutes that are really like penny whistle almost.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all basically the same style as far as native style.
Are they made with wood, or some are made with wood?
Yeah, they're mostly made out of wood, majority of them. Some people get creative, and they make PVC flutes, they get cane flutes, things like that. Or sometimes even some people get branches and actually make flutes out of branches, which is really cool. Mine are, they're pretty much like cedar, walnut, things like that, which is really beautiful smelling, good wood.
Nice. Well, you know, here in Hawaii, it's nose flute. A lot of people play the nose flute.
Yes, and I've met some amazing nose flute flautists in the past. There's some really talented guys. I have a good friend out that lives in Hawaii, Oahu, Kiali Kapuna. I don't know if you know Kiali, Walt Kapuna.
Maybe, I'm not sure.
He's actually a relative of Iz.
Oh, really? Wow, that's nice. Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
He's a cousin.
Uh-huh.
Matter of fact, we play together. He plays the ukulele like his cousin did, and we do It's a Wonderful World together. We've done it quite a few times.
Oh, that's always popular. That's the most requested song here for every wedding. Everyone wants to have Brother Iz's Wonderful World played at their wedding.
Yeah,
it's the one. It is the one.
And we played together with him singing it, and he sounds a lot like his cousin. This is just different level as far as octave wise, but he plays it very well, and I play the flute behind him when he's
how lovely.
We did it, like I said, we did it last year in Oahu. It was really a lot of fun.
Wow. Well, next time you'll have to come over and visit on Maui. It's been wonderful talking to you. Again, Fuego is just out, and again, we'll find out. And good, the best of luck on the NAMIs. Can anyone vote on those, or do you have to be signed?
Yeah, everybody can vote. And it's not really that difficult to vote. Some people are having some issues saying, I got to register as a voting member. Well, it's not a big deal. All you got to do is put your email and some information that they have. It's free. You don't have to pay for anything. There's no charge. And the address is www.surveymonkey.com/r/Native Music Awards, and you take a minute. There's a lot of Native people. You can have your favorite artists, or mm-hmm. you might explore to some of the music. If you go to NativeAmericanMusic.com, you'll find the different music, all the music's there. You can listen to, and if you don't remember what I just read off, you could just go to NativeAmericanMusicAwards.com, and you'll find it. You go to vote mm-hmm. now, and you go right into what I just mentioned, the Survey Monkey.
Well, and, I think it's wonderful, and you got my vote, and have a wonderful trip to Japan, and And you'll have to check back in and let us know how it went with you, Japan and Florida. And
I will do that.
Best of luck at the Latin Grammys and everything. So and on your work. I think it's wonderful. Wonderful talking to you, Steve.
Nice talking to you too, Cindy. You take care and thank you so much.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Aloha. Aloha. Aloha. Aloha.